south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, I'm going to go right into a very un-PC boots-on-the-ground story, or else I'm going to forget it. I've been meaning to mention this for a couple of weeks now. I just didn't get around to it. And it's on the topic of Latin American guys that are almost always unfaithful to their wives and girlfriends. Now, you longtime listeners have heard me say 100 times that if you asked any eligible or even not so eligible Latin American guy who his ideal woman would be, he will almost always say, why, a gringa, of course, 100% gringa. And a tall, white, blonde, blue-eyed gringa is at the absolute top of the pecking order. Of course, when it comes right down to it, they'll tell you any gringa will do. And for a lot of reasons, too, not just because they can elevate the social economic status of a Latin guy, which they almost always do. It's because of the gringo and gringo wannabe culture here in Latin America, too. That said, I get a continuous trickle of emails from gringas on that subject. I'm talking about gringa expat gonabes and wannabes, you know, ones that actually have zero experience going out with Latin guys, but would love to have the chance once they get down here. You know, that suave Latin lover image is universal. So yes, I get emails from gringas who don't necessarily like my evaluation, romantic that is, of Latino guys. Now, some are ladies that have been down for vacations and such, but not for a long enough time to actually have a romantic relationship with a Latino guy. However, when I get emails from gringas who are living here in Latin America, I have yet to get a single one of them disagree with me, and I do get lots of emails from them too. They always tell me their sad Latino love and romance stories, which is unfortunate. They always end the same with the guy cheating on them. So anyway, this story goes out to all you gringas living up in the States and Canada and in Europe who have a bone to pick with me on the subject of Latinos being unfaithful to their wives and girlfriends. Now, again, I'm not saying every single Latino is unfaithful to his girlfriend, wife, or whatever consensual partner, because nothing is 100% certain. In fact, I happen to know two Latino guys who I know are not unfaithful to their wives. Though that's not saying much, since I've been observing Latin society for 30 plus years now. But I do know two Latinos who I know would never be unfaithful. One who is a software engineer, a complete nerd, who considers himself very fortunate. Just happy as a clam to have found a lady to date and then eventually marry. He told me all his adult life he's clammed up around women. But he found a lady and married her. I say good for him and even better for the lady because he'll never cheat on her. And the other 100% faithful Latino guy that I know, well, he's told me he's had the urge to cheat, but he's just deathly afraid of getting caught. So he hasn't so far after being married, I think it's 5 or 6 years now, but I'd say the jury's still out. In fact, he said, and he's a really funny guy, he said, I married my wife, she was 110 pounds. On our 5th year wedding anniversary, she was 135. He says, if she hits 150, well, I'll probably cheat on her. Though he should talk, he's got a nice beer belly going too. Anyway, so a little background first. Now, I'm what you might call an ovo-pescatarian. That means I eat mostly eggs, fish, and vegetables and fruits. And I don't like to buy my fish or seafood in a grocery store or pre-packaged so you don't know when or where the stuff came from. Of course, in those big box stores like Sam's Club and Costco, if you're into reading labels like I am, you'll see the fish comes from Indonesia, Vietnam, China. No thanks. So, about every 2 or 3 weeks, I'll take a ride out to a fresh fish place, you know, where the trucks come in from the ocean daily. And sometimes I'll trek all the way out to the ocean to one of the piers where the boats come in every day and they sell fish right off the boat. Well, not exactly off the boat, but they come in and a bunch of guys at the pier sort them out. And within probably a minute's walk, there are a few little hole-in-the-wall bars and restaurants. And right outside, there are little guys set up with tables, coolers, and very sharp knives. And that's where you make a deal with one of those guys, depending on what kind of fish you want, because they usually have got maybe 10 different kinds, and half of them, you've never even heard their names before. So then are those fish that you've never heard of any good? Well, as always, you get what you pay for. Just go ahead and price out the stuff by the pound. That's an excellent way to find out the good, the bad, and the ugly, even at a fish market. So then what I'll usually do is I'll tell a guy I want 10 pounds of a certain fish, have them fillet it for me right there and cut it into little slabs about 3 inches wide. Then I throw it in my little cooler filled with ice. I always bring one because I could be driving more than an hour, and you don't want to have warm fish in the car. I have the guy fillet the stuff. I don't like doing that myself. I'm not very good at it, and it's no fun. It takes the guy about a half hour to do that, so I walk over to one of the little restaurants, have coffee, sit around, and shoot the breeze with the waitresses who know me because I'm the only gringo they ever see down there. That's what they tell me. Then again, I am way off the gringo tourist trail. So anyway, on my last trip down to the pier a couple weeks ago, that reminds me, I'm running short on fish fillets right now, so I guess I'll be going down in a couple days. Oh, and my favorite fish, pargo, grouper, dorado, and a couple others. And lately, I've been paying something like $3 to $4 a pound, fully filleted, no scales, no skin, no bones. So anyway, on occasion, a couple of my Latino friends like to tag along and buy some fish too. Last time I went, three of my Latino buddies came along. Now, these are guys I've known for a while, ages between about 30 and 45. All three of them married with kids, or I should say one of them actually married, the other two common law. They've got kids, but they haven't actually gone down and made it official. But they've been together with their ladies at least 5 years. Oh, and that's another thing you have to know about living here in Latin America. I'd say 50% or more of all the Latinos and Latinas who tell you they're married, they're not really officially married, not married on paper. It's kind of a strange thing to realize at first. They've got kids, a family, house, car, the works, and yet they're not officially married. But they'll tell you they are, and they'll introduce themselves to people as a married couple. And there doesn't seem to be much of a stigma at all about it. Now, I know there are lots of people living together up in the States, too, but they don't go around telling people they're married. And believe me, when Latinos and Latinas tell you they're married here, they're not trying to get one over on you. It rolls off their tongues so naturally, you really think they are married. You've got no doubt. However, later on, if you get to know them for a while, the subject just might come up and they'll come right out and say, yeah, we never went down to the church or the courthouse. We'll get around to it someday, but they almost never do. So the numbers vary a bit, but I'd say at least half of the people in Latin America, adults that is, are not officially married. But technically, you know, after a certain time period has elapsed, by the statutes of their country, it's a common law marriage. But that's not what I wanted to get into today. First, let me tell you guys out there, if you have Latino friends, they just can't stop making remarks about women. They talk about and rate practically every girl on the street between the ages of 15 and 50. It reminds me a lot of the locker room talk you'd hear back in high school. It seems to me, most Latino guys never grew out of adolescence. In regards to, well, you know what I'm talking about. So anyway, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. Me and these three Latino guys are at the pier having a coffee. Well, I was having a coffee anyway. The other guys were drinking beer. 10 in the morning, drinking beer. So we're just a stone's throw away from the guy who's filleting the fish. That takes like a half an hour. So we're shooting the breeze and one of the guys' phone rings. He says, oh no, not her again. And he shows us a picture of this sexy girl who's calling him on WhatsApp. You know, they all have WhatsApp. Oh, and I did tell you, they all were married, or kind of married, at least 5 years and had kids. Well, two of these guys have kids from other women, too. Very, very normal down here. Oh, and these guys aren't low-class guys, either. Though unmarried couples with families and kids are much more common in the lower socioeconomic brackets. That's pretty much universally true. But these guys are not low-class. All three of them own businesses. Not anything fancy, but they do pretty well. One has an auto supply business. Another guy brings in shipping containers and has a storage business. And the third guy's got a construction and remodeling company. All three of them hardworking, salt-of-the-earth guys. Two of them with business degrees. A lot of fun to go out and hang with, but you're not going to have any really deep, profound conversations with them, if you know what I mean. Unless it's about sports. Nope, these guys and most Latinos will not tax your brain. Do I sound like a dick or what? Hey, we all need a mix. Salt of the earth guys and nerd friends too. And if you're wondering how I know these guys, well, one guy lives close to me. Another one I met out in the park flying my drone. He was flying his too. That takes a particular kind of person, so we had that in common. And the other guy, well, his girlfriend's best friends with my girlfriend. So I met him that way. So anyway, the phone rings, it's WhatsApp, there's a sexy girl there, and the guy says, Oh no, not her again. I blocked her number once already. She must be using one of her friend's phones. That's one of the tricks they use, he said. You block them and they use someone else's phone to try to get through to you. I said, what do you mean? What are you talking about? He said, man, that's the problem with this mama huevo WhatsApp. Puta madre. He was visibly upset. He said, man, you know, when this WhatsApp thing came out, we all thought it was so great, but it can get you in a shitload of trouble too. He said, my girlfriend is always checking my phone. And the other two guys piped up and said, yeah, me too. I got in plenty of trouble with WhatsApp. And then one of them said, yeah, it's getting harder and harder to screw around on your wife because they always want your WhatsApp. And if you don't give it to them, they'll find you somehow on Facebook or somewhere. And as soon as she gets your WhatsApp number, you're screwed. You might as well toss your SIM chip and start all over again. Oh, and it turns out all three of those guys had done that at one time or another in the past year or so. Dumped their SIM chip because they had other girls on the line calling. That means you got to get a whole new phone number and change everything. All your personal contacts, family, banking. Think about what a hassle that would be for you. Man, that would screw up anyone's life for a while. And then one of the guys said, yeah, but there's one saving grace with WhatsApp, though it won't save you more than once or twice. And that is, he said, every week or so, or maybe every couple of weeks, some hot girl will pop up on your WhatsApp, photo and all, looking to connect with you. It's always a girl you don't know, asking for a date, but she's really out to scam you. There's always some girls like that, trolling the web. They're easy to spot. And if you just ignore her, don't answer. Don't write back. You can block them and they're gone forever. But if you just type in one word like hi or hello, she'll just bombard you with sexy photos. Eventually, she'll ask you for money, give you a sob story about losing her job, grandma's in the hospital, whatever. And the next time your girlfriend grabs your phone, she'll check your WhatsApp history. She'll see it and you better have some answers quick. But then again, she'll see you only put one word in there, hi or hello, and that will diffuse the situation. So the guy was basically saying, if the girl you're screwing around with gets your WhatsApp and your wife or girlfriend grabs the phone, you can always use the excuse an unknown girl just popped up on your phone, because they do once in a while. But it soon becomes like that worn out old excuse when people don't answer their email. They say, oh, it must have ended up in my spam box. Yeah, well, that'll work once or twice, but not much more than that. So what's the point of all this? Well, here's what happened next. The guy who was upset because the girl he was cheating on with showed up on his WhatsApp. He said, you know, I'm so sick of having to explain this stuff to my girlfriend. I'm just sick of all the fights and all the drama. He said, you know, I'm going to start doing what my two brothers do. They're sick of getting caught cheating on their wives, too. They just go to the Club de Nocturno, the nightclub. He said, you know, during COVID, they're not open, but they really are. They just leave the door open. They don't have the fluorescent lights outside. They stay open 24/7. But they look completely closed and dead on the outside. He said to us, look, there's this place, and he gave the address, that I go to during the daytime. It's $40. The girls are beautiful. They treat you like gold, and they never ask your name or for your WhatsApp number. And then one of the other guys piped up and said, are you talking about Club Platinum or Club Elite? For my money, he said, the Venus Club is the best. Then the other guy piped up and said, that's my favorite club too, the Venus Club. Then one of them said, when we going? How about Friday? We'll just tell our wives we're going with Johnny to the pier to get some fish again. I said, wait a minute, guys, count me out. Then he said, don't worry, no pressure. But if anyone asks, we all went to the pier. So Friday came around, and you know, well, boys will be boys. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this little story is for all you ladies who've been sending me emails over the years saying, Johnny, come on, you can't lump all Latinos together. They can't be the serial cheaters you make them out to be. Well, ladies, I can tell you this. I've never met an adult Latina who hasn't caught her husband or boyfriend cheating on her. And it's always the number one topic of conversation on a first date with a Latina. It's a routine question that always comes up. You'll get it back at you, too. How come you don't have a boyfriend or husband, whatever? And the answer, 99% of the time, we broke up. He cheated on me. Guys, when that happens to you out there, your next question to her should be, so he cheated, huh? How many times? And many times her answer will blow your mind, because for a first world person, just once is generally enough to put you permanently in the doghouse. But here in Latin America, guys get caught cheating over and over and over again, and the ladies keep taking them back. And in some ways, that's a huge part of your gringo advantage. Because whether it's true or not, we're stereotyped as being much more faithful than the average Latino guy. And I'll tell you another thing, we definitely don't lie as much. You know, since Latinos cheat on their ladies so much, when caught, even red-handed, they're expert liars. And they've learned how to tear up at will, something us gringos and expats have not mastered at all yet. By the way, did you ever read the book Everybody Lies? Man, is it an eye-opener. If you want it in ebook form, I'll give you a copy for nothing. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. The name of the book again? Everybody Lies. Read it. It'll shock you. All right, shifting gears just a little bit. Earlier in the show, I mentioned one of those Latino friends of mine I met while droning, you know, while engaged in the sport of flying drones. You know, it is sort of a sport. Oh, and people have asked me, Johnny, what's your favorite sport? Why, it's talking. But you knew that already, right? So then you might ask, how did I get into drone flying? Well, besides the fact that my good friend Oscar Miner has around 10 drones in various stages of construction and deconstruction in his house. So obviously I had someone to lean on if I ever crashed or had a malfunction. And it actually did work out that way. Some years back, I crashed my drone and the camera would no longer swivel and move with the controls. So he helped me out with the repair job. Believe me, those things are so loaded with electronics. Tearing one of those things down is like doing surgery. But I digress. Where was I? Oh yeah, how did I get started? Well, the primary reason is that probably around 7 years ago, one of the attendees to my Expat Insider Seminar, a very, very cool guy named Doug, brought a drone down to the seminar. It came in its own little backpack. So he had that thing on his back, just like, you know, a backpack. Impossible to tell there was a drone in there. That was the first time I had ever seen one of those things. Anyway, one of the side trips we took at that seminar was to see some Mayan ruins, a couple of pyramids. And Doug had the great idea to fly that drone above the pyramids and take some 4K video of it. And oddly enough, there was a wedding going on right at the base of the pyramid, and he got that captured on film too. Oh, and here's something you'll never forget. When they do weddings at the pyramids, yep, they allow them. Oftentimes to get in the mood, to get in the spirit of things, they'll hire a shaman too. You know, a local guy dressed up in the Mayan headdress and all those beads and bangles and stuff. Now, that's a wedding you'll never forget. So that happened something like 7 years ago, maybe eight. And that was before they had lots of easy and cheap ways to ship things from the States to Guatemala. So I said, Doug, I'm guessing it would be pretty difficult to order one of those things from Amazon and have it sent down. So can you do me a favor? If you're ever coming down to Guatemala again, pick me up a drone just like yours. Well, a year later, he did come back down. He became one of those famous seminar repeat offenders. And he sold me his drone because he also was into many drones and drone racing. So he had a collection going. So for years, that became my go-to standard drone. It was called the DJI Phantom 3. So from then on, I was sold on DJI drones. You know, there are lots of good brand names for drones, but DJI, it's considered the industry leader. It's the drone company with the most innovations. Every year, they come out with new ones that are better and smaller, longer battery flight times. They'll go farther distances. And now they've all got built-in obstacle avoidance systems too, so you'd have to be a real idiot to slam into a pole or a tree. Though that still does happen on occasion. That said, my advice for gringos and expats living in Latin America, man, get yourself a drone. There are such great things to see in such wide open spaces. There are virtually no restrictions to flying a drone around here. It really is an excellent hobby. So I had that DJI Phantom 3 drone and I liked it a lot. But you know, technology marches on and fast. So after a half dozen years or so, it just was not the state of the art anymore. I graduated to a smaller, faster, and more nimble drone, also a DJI, called a Mavic 2 Air. Just came out within the last year for about $1,000. It's rated the best small drone in its class. That's Mavic, M-A-V-I-C, 2, Air, A-I-R. So then why am I bringing this up? Because something happened to me the other day that will never happen up in the States. Well, at least I don't think it will. It happened while droning. Oh, and by the way, if you're flying a drone up in the States, there are all kinds of warnings, cautions, and restricted airspaces. In fact, all the new drones, when you first start them up, they'll connect to a handful of GPS satellites and throw a map down on your screen, a very detailed map with your drone right in the center, and you'll see various concentric red and yellow circles, restricted airspaces. Those are areas you're not supposed to fly in. And man, in the States, there are thousands of those restricted airspaces, not just around airports either. And if you violate one of those, you're in big trouble. But here in Latin America, as usual, practically anything goes. Kinda. Well, if you're close to an airport, you'll see those concentric circles too. But no one's checking, no one's monitoring, no one's ever been fined, not that I know of. The droning community would certainly put out the word if that was the case. In other words, you're on your honor. Once again, it's further proof that you've got tremendous freedoms here in Latin America, and they aren't going away anytime soon. Unlike, you know, do I have to say it? So anyways, the other day, I decided to take the new drone out for a spin. I've only had it about a month. Right around 6 at night, about an hour before the sun goes down. That and early in the day seem to be the best time so you don't get glare on your screen. Because the sun, you know, is intense here in Latin America. So I took the drone up about 200 feet. That's about 20 stories high, if you're thinking about it in terms of building height. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, came a flock of about 100 parrots. The thing is, you see these flocks of parrots all the time. Squawking away, they are loud, you know. At night, they roost in a particular group of trees. And in the morning, around 7, they all take off at once, going somewhere else for the day, probably to feed somewhere. And at night, around 6 o'clock, the flock comes back to those trees for the night. Only that night, right before nightfall, instead of keeping their normal distance a couple of blocks away from where I sometimes go out and take a stroll, they dive-bombed my drone. The whole flock just converged on it. Got it all on film, too. Then they took off, and I played with the drone for another 10 minutes or so. You know, that Mavic 2 Air will go 30 minutes on one battery, and it comes with three. So anyway, after 10 minutes, I slowly started bringing it back to me. Now, another cool thing the newer drones have is a button called Return to Home. You just press that button, and it knows exactly where it started off from, and it'll come right back and land very gently in the exact same spot you launched it from. Kind of scary the first time you do it, because it just doesn't seem possible, but it works. So anyway, it's about a couple of blocks away from me, and it's coming home slowly. And as it was descending, and it got to about 100 feet in the air, that's about a building 10 stories high. Suddenly, out of nowhere, I heard that unmistakable sound of parrots again. That same group of 100 swooped in and dive-bombed the drone. And I quickly laid on the gas. Man, I zoomed out of there. Suddenly, from a different direction, came another flock of parrots. Now I had two different swarms of them bombing my drone. Then, whack, I saw some feathers fly. One of them nicked a propeller blade. Got that on film, too. Well, the feathers flying scared them off, and I got the drone home alive. In one piece, anyway. Luckily, when you buy one of those things, it gave you two or three extra sets of propellers. I wonder why. I examined the thing and saw a little spray of blood on the body of it. So at least one of those birds paid the price of being too curious. So after reviewing the footage, and man, it was like a horror movie, I got on my computer and went to the DJI drone forum. I punched in the question, has anyone's drone been attacked by birds? And I got tons of responses, with most people saying a big bird, like a hawk or an eagle, swooped down and actually grabbed the drone and sped away with it, never to be heard from again. And some had the same experience as I had. Feathers flew and the drone escaped. And some had broken props and cracked bodies, but limped on home. And I got a lot of advice, too. One guy said if they're nesting nearby and laying eggs, they're always on the lookout for other bird predators that'll steal them, like hawks and eagles. And a drone is just about predator size. Turns out there are evasive maneuvers to take if that happens. You're supposed to immediately accelerate the drone vertically, straight up, because birds can't do that. They can do all kinds of fantastic maneuvers, but they can't go straight up. They have to glide on the currents. So if you go straight up, they have to swerve around in a big arc to come back at you. And by that time, you could drop really fast and get on home. So as for that experience, I'm sure it was because of the time of day I was flying that thing. They were coming back to their nearby trees, their home, for the night. And here's the best part, or maybe it's not the best part, it's the weirdest part. I got a text posting from a guy who has the very same drone I have. That would be the DJI Mavic Air 2. He's a beekeeper who likes to keep an eye on his hives. He said he's done many flyovers, and the bees never seem to mind. Of course, he's up at least 100 feet or so in the air. Bees don't go up that high, he said. But then, he said, a very strange thing happened last month. He was far enough away from his hives, about 120 feet. Then, suddenly, his drone, and he saw this on the camera, was surrounded by 30 to 40 bees that kept attacking his drone. A lot of them died. They got squished, and he's got it all on film. His drone became unstable and quickly lost altitude, but he was able to remain in control and landed it. When he examined the thing, he saw there were some dead bee parts stuck to it. Also, there were patches of sticky stuff on the drone, too. So he asked his local bee expert if he ever heard or seen anything like that before. And here's the crazy thing. He said, "That's a good one. I don't think anyone's ever reported having a drone that was attacked by bees." But his best guess was that the bees were confused by the high-pitched sound those drones make. They do make a lot of noise. And he said a small drone makes a sound much like a virgin queen bee flying out of the hive in her maiden mating flight. And the drone bees took that as a signal to mate, and they were doing what nature intended them to do. Though being sucked into a sort of mini tornado was definitely not the plan. All right, then now, the thought for the day. Actually, a funny thought for the day. This one comes from Andrew in Montreal. He says, "Johnny, I really hope you do your next Expat Insider Seminar soon. I'll be coming down with just 2 suitcases and an overfilled backpack." Then he says, "Can you believe it? I haven't watched television in over 2 years. And when I walk into somebody else's house, a bar or restaurant, and they've got the TV on, I completely block it out. Even though I used to watch sports all the time, I had Sky TV, paid $60 a month to get all the sports channels. But eventually I realized sports was all about the money. If you're an owner with big money, you could buy the best team. Where's the sport in that? Aside from that, everything on the tube and in social media is about fame, and I don't get today's version of fame. Am I hopelessly out of touch with society or what?" Now, I can see why Kim Kardashian got famous for that Emmy Award performance on her famous sex tape. Excellent role model that she is. But how does a perpetual slacker and terrible role model for kids like, for example, Snoop Dogg, how does a guy like that ever become famous? To me, he looks like Spike Lee's and Maxine Waters' love child, conceived while honeymooning at Chernobyl. Today's version of fame? I just don't get it, Johnny. Maybe I am hopelessly out of touch. Needless to say, when I get down to Central America, I won't be buying a TV. Signed, Andrew. P.S. I hope you've got space at the seminar. It can't come soon enough for me. All right, Andrew, thanks for that. You know, I think you've got something there. Spike Lee and Maxine Waters' love child conceived while honeymooning at Chernobyl? Wish I'd have thought of that.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.